Radio. The transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves on radio frequency, especially those carrying sound messages, or the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public. Fanboy. A male fan, especially one who behaves in an obsessive or overexcited way.
This is the Radio Fanboy Podcast, and here's your host, Bevo.
This guy has worked in radio and all sorts of roles, being an announcer, an image producer, a voiceover artist. And he is on the podcast today. Let's welcome Tony Lawson. Hello, Tony.
I'm travelling to Mount Gambier. I've got family down there, so I'm on the road. If I sound a bit roomy, then it's because I'm in a Pajero chatting with you.
What, have you found a nice quiet park or something to pull over and have a chat to me?
Well, I feel like I've parked in someone's driveway, but it's pretty quiet. I'm actually in Keith. I'm halfway there, so I think I'm pretty safe here. The population here is about 1,000, so I reckon, you know, it's not going to be too much of a problem.
Let's talk about your beginnings in Mount Gambier, because it seems to be a bit of a hotspot for radio industry legends to come out of Mount Gambier.
Oh, it does. It is. It's very, very radio-friendly in the 90s, especially. The 90s produced a lot of, I think, really talented people. Not just myself, but you've got Daniel O'Carroll. He's up in Queensland, very talented guy. He's a social media for Grant Broadcasters. It's him. You've got Simon Carey, trigger my brain.
Hot tomato on the Gold Coast.
Oh, I love Simon. My mum had a crush on Simon. So he was, I love Simon. I think he's one of the good guys of radio and definitely a wonderful Mount Gambier boy. There's David Drinkle. He's out of Mount Gambier. He's at 3BA, Ballarat. And I just caught up with him over the weekend, so it was lovely to see him. And Lyndon. So I met Lyndon at 5SE. I reckon it would have been 1993, 1994. And I'm just this work experience kid, straight out of 5GDR FM, which was a community radio station, still is. And I rock up there, and we're talking about like places we could park the Roadrunner. And I said, why don't we park near the school, and we'll get all the kids when they get out of school at 3:30. He thought that was the best idea. And he's like, man, that was really good. I'm like, I know. So I love Lyndon. I haven't seen him for a long time, but I hear he's doing very well.
Where did your interest spark for getting into radio? It obviously seems like a great spot to grow up and get into radio by the sounds of it with all those people around you.
Yeah. So my mum was in radio from when I was a very young age, and I was about 7. And this new radio station started in Mount Gambier called 5GDR, and I think it was around 1984. And so my mum joined, and that was kind of like the station was like a hangout joint, like it was a hangout place where you could, you know, there was a level of professionalism, you know, you had to learn the ropes and do all of those things. But it was a really great bunch of friends and a cool bunch of people. So I spent a lot of time with my mother. And, you know, I'd be on the radio doing, you know, bits and bobs. And then I learned production. I was away for a couple of years, come back. Then I was doing drive shows on the radio station, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. And sometimes I'd wag school or I'd leave early just to be at the radio station. So radio was, I was obsessed with radio in the 90s when I was 14, 15. Such a great time for radio for all of us, and that's where, you know, we had a group of people. It was Daniel O'Carroll, there's another guy, Daniel Seward, there's David Drinkle, Peter Nielsen, and Paul McFarlane. We were this like A team at this radio station, and we were kids, and we just, you know, listened to Melbourne, listened to Adelaide, and tried to, you know, replicate it on this community radio station we had.
Your first job in radio out of Mount Gambier, where did you find yourself?
It was November 1997. And I put all these demos together, and I sent them all around the country, you know, went to Melbourne, Sydney, blah, 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 blah. And I sent one to Perth, and I sort of, my girlfriend at the time, I looked at her and I kissed the tape. I go, I want this one. This is the one I want. And because I had some family in Perth. And so I got the job, and I couldn't even believe it. I was like, gosh, really? All right, this is cool. So I went to Perth, and I was the just the cart boy, really. I was expecting a lot more from Triple M, I thought, because the radio station we had computers, and we were doing, you know, all the stuff on computers. Like, that's where we were at. And I got to Triple M, and everything was on tape. And I was like, I got there, and I was like, what? what's this shit? And I even said it to a few people. I go, you know, I'm from community radio. And they're like, yeah. Well, I got there and, you know, it was a really great vibe, though. The station was just so full of just really cool people. And, you know, Jessica Gale, actually, first week, Jessica Gale, she goes, you know what they're calling you around here? And I go, what? They go, fresh meat. And I'm like, is that right? And that was my introduction to Jessica Gale, who is, oh my gosh, I love her so much. So that was really my introduction. It was very exciting, and I was totally caught up in a whirlwind there.
Who else was there at the time?
So there was Ben Wosley. There was Claire, who Bad Boy Ben and the Vixen. And somehow I was making some stuff and I ended up being the producer of that show. And I was so excited. I was like, look at me, I'm just producing this epic show. And it was an amazing show. The ratings were through the roof.
What was it again? The Hot 30 or Top 30 or something like that?
Yeah, it was the Hot 30 with Bad Boy Ben and the Vixen.
Yes,
and
that's right.
Yeah, it was, oh gosh, that was a juggernaut of a show. It was just so epic. Like, to be honest, the station didn't rate very high during the day. I think it was probably doing a 2 or 3, but hit 6 or 7 o'clock and it just shot straight up to like 25,
wow.
30. It was crazy. Who else did I meet? It was Kyle Sandilands. Kyle, one of the first questions I think he asked me was, after he sort of knew what I was doing, goes, Sat, how much are they paying you? I'm like, I don't know, less than welfare. And he's like, so long and short, we got on really well, and I ended up moving in to his place for a while. I know. He's like, yeah, you can have the room. So that was really cool. And, well, my relationship with Kyle, he just sort of, whenever he got a gig, he sort of, like, called up and got me there. And, you know, that led me to Sydney. Because I was at 96 as well. Yeah, oh, so there was Steve Fitton and Jessica Gale and Duncan Campbell. Yeah, he was cool. Like, I loved working with Duncan. Very easy to work with. I'm sure he hasn't changed much since. You know, brilliant.
Oh, wow.
Over time, yeah.
Where did you go from there?
I went to Hot 100 in Darwin, Mix 104.9. Kyle was there for 2 weeks, so he got me up there and then he bolted. Oh. I'm like, thanks, mate. Nice. Great. Okay, we'll see you next time. And so that was, who was the content director there? Steve Hart. But that was just hot. That was just the story of Darwin for me. It was just hot all the time, all the time. Couldn't escape the heat. And then one summer, would you call the dry season, wet season? I can't remember. The air conditioner failed and that was a tragic disaster. And they're like, what do you get? A fan. So I got a fan. Anyway, so Hot 100 was just ridiculous. I was production manager. Amy Collette was, the commercial scheduler for Hot 100 and Mix 104.9. And boy, I don't know whether she's changed much, but we did one hell of an amount of drinking.
That's pretty much all you do in Darwin, isn't it?
pretty much. It was just a lot of drinking. It's very much a party town because the pubs are open every day and every night.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there were times and, you know, that I would get home at say 5 o'clock and then I'd get a couple of hours sleep and then I'd be at work again. I'd be like, this is madness. But that's, you know, look, hi, Amy. Yeah. I hope you're not living like that still, but hanging with Amy, it's always a party. So, that was my days at Hot 100.
And from Hot 100, you went to?
I went to Townsville, the blue block on Woolcock. That's what they called it, the blue block on Woolcock.
So was it at the Strand then?
No, it wasn't at the Strand. This was on, I can't remember, but it was across the road from McDonald's. And so my job there, I was a network image producer for Queensland, and my content director was John Inglis.
Was that Hot FM back then?
Yeah, it was Hot FM, and they called them the Heritage Stations. I'm not sure what they call them now, but back then they called them the Heritage Stations, and that was like 4 a.m., 4TO.
Yeah, now it's just Triple M.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. See, it was so much nicer. See, people can just say they worked at Triple M or Hit now.
Yeah.
And it was like, nah, well, not really. You don't work at Triple M. I mean, hi to all the great talent at Triple M at all the little stations. But, you know, when it first happened, I was like, really? Really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that was the hot stations, and I don't know, that role was interesting. I actually found it easier producing for 24 stations than I did for two. But then that role broadly expanded to, at one point, all of the stations, which was Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia, and WA. Yeah, that got busy. I love Townsville. Townsville's such a beautiful town, and, you know, everyone who worked there was just great. So it was a really good vibe at DMG, at the Blue Block at Walcott.
Who was doing the voiceovers at that stage for your imaging? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I've got to think real hard on this. It was Bob Peters was the voice for the heritage stations. Jamie was for the hot station. I made some really cool stuff at that radio station. I reckon if I listen back to it now, I go, oh, that sucks. You know, but back then I thought I was making some really cool stuff, and people were telling me I was making cool stuff. So I was like, I must be. But I have heard a couple of promos I made back then. I'm like, oh, yeah, meh. Could have done better.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a long time ago. It's all part of your formative years as you develop your career and cut your teeth into radio, as they say.
Yeah, so true.
Do you remember who was in the building when you were working there?
Greg Dean, he was crusty. He did the Hot 30. Steve Price, he's just an institution. He'll never leave.
No, like, well, he's still there, and he's, you know, still talking about his mangoes.
That's amazing. You know what the amazing thing is? It was almost like he'd been there forever when I was there. And it was like, and now we're in 2020. It's like, how long is really long? He was pretty deaf too. He was losing his hearing back then, so I'm surprised he can like wear headphones. It's incredible. We'd walk in the studio, it was just blasting.
Wow.
Steve Price is a total legend. Ronnie Stanton, one of the funniest people on air, to be honest, in my opinion. I think Ronnie Stanton is, he's not famous enough, in my opinion, for being a breakfast announcer in this country. Like, he used to do a breakfast show at Hot 91, and I was at Hot 91 for about 3 months, and it was Chrissy and Ronnie, Chrissy from Big Brother. And honestly, I would cry listening to that show. They would switch the microphone on, and they would just be pissing themselves laughing for what they were talking about before they switched the microphone on. And they'd be like, oh, Ronnie. Oh, we'll go to a break. And they go to a break, right? And then it would come back and we're like, 6 to 8. Oh, we'll left. We'll come back in a sec. And they would just go to a bump. It's like just having the biggest laugh and the funnest time. So I personally think that was one of the funniest shows. I mean, I don't even know if they really did a lot of content. I know they did a lot of laughing. And boy, they were just so bloody funny. Chrissy and Ronnie. Ronnie Stanton, absolute legend. From Hot 91, see, I was at Today FM before that. Yep. I produced the Kyle and Jackie O show before that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So Kyle got you back for that.
Yeah, so that was Bondi Junction, and produced that show for a bit. It was pretty bloody overwhelming, won't lie. So then I went to Hot 91. Then I came back and I was bumming around for a bit. And then Vega started to kind of like, kickstart a little bit. There was talk of a new radio station starting.
I remember that because you did a bit of work at ARN as well for The Edge.
There were so many things going on, Lee.
Yeah.
Like it was just such a busy, that was one of my busiest times. And I was doing stuff with Charlie and you.
Yeah, because I remember Charlie starting and goes, oh, what we need is a really good producer just to go crazy with stuff. And I said, I know the guy. And then we go,
gosh, we did. We did. That was such a great time. And there was some madness going on in that imaging.
Yeah.
That was for The Edge. And that was just, it was just crazy. It was just like whatever went. And it wasn't like there was that, oh, that's right. There was a segment called So-and-So's Fact Hunt.
Polly's Fact Hunt.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
God, couldn't you swear on this podcast, Lee?
It
basically came out the wrong way. Who was doing that breakfast show?
Oh, that was Chris Fade. He did it.
That's right.
He was filling in, and he's the one that actually dropped the full meaning of that definition.
Oh, gosh, that was so funny.
It was so funny. For those listening at home, the C was in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
That was a crazy time. So at one point, because I was producing for ARN, I was voicing for Star 104.5, and I was producing for Vega. Wow. At the time. Wow. And plus, I think I was doing some other stuff in the regionals in South Australia. So it was just not a lot of sleep. And I think anybody who's been a producer and anybody who's done a lot of work and been awake for a really long time and you get stuck for ideas, I think the delusion of being sleepless really brings out a lot of some insane ideas. And it's like, well, I've got no ideas, so I'm just going to go random, just shoot the breeze. And I think that's what we did with The Edge. It was just a lot of nonsense sketches which became promos.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it amazing the ideas that you do get when you're overtired? You just go crazy, and then that can be your best work instead of, you know, those well thought out ideas that, you know, you bring up in strategy meetings and so forth and brainstorm.
Oh, I agree. You know, what I discovered, just learn a few things in the way I love listen in terms of the style of production I like to listen to, and the style of production which, you know, creates good you know, productivity and is authentic. When you sit down and you write something and you're going, okay, you know, I've written that, that's really funny, ha 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 ha, and then you get to the studio and you're like, actually, could have done, this isn't actually funny. And it's almost like the moment was gone. So what I just started to do was, instead of writing these sort of like, you know, generic fake kind of promos that can tend to be written and become almost every station sounds the same type of thing, it would just walk into a studio and just shoot the breeze, muck around. And instead of trying to relive the moment, like, you know, oh, you should have been there moment, we started just to create the moment and turn that moment into a promo. And so promos tended to not be so scripted, and they were just dot pointed. And I, after ARN, that was how I did promos. It was just easier. I found them so much funnier and way more entertaining and more authentic. And it's also like, it doesn't matter if it's a bad idea, because you can hammer that idea that's maybe even a little bit shitty, and you can actually turn a shitty idea into a great idea. And sometimes it takes just one line and it just brings it all together. So that's what I learned doing all those radio stations that one time, was to find, you know, it doesn't matter which direction you go, if you it's the way it's executed that really is the key.
Way out there. Did you get some inspiration from listening to like international radio stations as well?
Oh yeah. So back in the 90s, I was obsessed with BBC Radio 1.
Yeah.
I just loved that radio station. It was the best sounding imaging, you know. I just thought BBC Radio 1 was, that was my inspiration. Back in the early 90s, it was Century 21 Presentations, and there were these crappy kind of imaging CDs from the US.
Oh, right. And
yeah, that was just like, you know, pick-a-pew, that type of sort of sound. But it was, it was BBC, and they just executed it really well. So I really love that. In the early 2000s, it was New York's number one hit music station was Z100.
With Dave Fox.
And so, yeah, so that's the kind of stuff I was trying to emulate in Townsville. And so I ended up making all this stuff, and I sent it to Craig Bruce, and I emulated it like Sydney's number one hit music station. Anyway, he liked it.
Yeah.
And so I was over in Sydney. But when I got there, I knew I was, you know, no match for the likes of Konski and KCB, who just, there's no words to describe the amount of talent in those guys. And so I was just like thinking I was really great up in Townsville. And I get to Sydney, I'm like, oh, shit, these guys are really, really, really good. So that was, and, you know, KCB, we shared a studio, so I learned so much from that guy. He's just bloody legend. You see what he's doing lately?
Yeah, making films.
Oh, he's Bay just Rock a films. Gun. Bayrock Films, he's just a gun. Everything he touches turns to gold. Anyone listening to me talk about KCB knows it's true. And Casey, if you're listening, hey, mate, just killing it. You're just amazing. And, you know, he's an example of a guy who just follows his dreams, you know, continuously and ferociously. And he he's signing contracts with, I don't know, I think it's Sony or Warner. Anyway, I was really, really grateful to learn so many skills and so many tricks from him and sharing the studio with him. Yeah, he's incredible.
Well, he's actually the voice of Channel 7 at the moment too. He's their main imaging guy for like Home and Away and all those lifestyle shows. So there you go.
No surprise there. Yeah. No surprise there. God love him. He's amazing.
Yeah, we had him on the Australia Mobile DJ podcast a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, he can certainly talk. That's for sure. He had a lot to tell.
Oh, he does. Oh, I just love talking with him. So I'm a chatterbox, right? So when I'm talking right now and you're not saying anything, I'm like, oh, do I just keep talking?
Well, it's your podcast. You can talk about whatever you want.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, me and Casey, we would just chat. We had some great adventures. And yeah, like Casey, I just couldn't, when I was watching Casey when I first got to Sydney, I couldn't believe how fast he was. I didn't want to be like that person that goes, oh, can you slow down for a minute? Like, so I was like, if I stare at the screen long enough and I catch his hand movement on the mouse and the keyboard, maybe I'll get quick. And I eventually got pretty quick. In fact, I got real quick, I think. You know, and I don't think I'm blowing my own trumpet sound. I know I'm pretty quick on Pro Tools. And but he was amazing. He would be working on one promo, just piecing it together, while playing another one into Maestro.
Oh, my
God. I couldn't believe that any human could do two things at once. So if anyone's out there, any chicks out there saying guys can't do two things at once, I've never seen KCB produce anything. He is amazing. Anyway, hey, Casey, I've given you a good sell there, mate. You don't need me to do it, but bloody hell.
Well, I just remember watching you in action. You used to bring your little MacBook in and
plug it in
and you'd get it all happening and just like, whoa, look at this guy go.
Yeah, that's a bit of KCB training there. But yeah, I got really quick. And I got really quick. I think most producers get pretty quick because it's called unrealistic expectations. That is the big reason why. It's like, hey, mate, like Kyle would buzz through and he goes, oh, we need an opener. When do you need it by? Oh, in 8 minutes. And the rule was, 8-10 minutes. And the rule was every intro had to have a 10-minute bed.
Wow.
But you couldn't auto-upload at that point.
Yeah.
So it's like, come on. And there's giant amounts of anxiety. I mean, it's all easier now because you can just auto-upload. You can just drop a file in.
Yeah.
And it's all there, but yeah, you get pretty quick just simply because you got to get the job done, and then you find different ways of doing it, quicker ways of doing it. I found at one point that it was easier, like if you're making an opener, you can make a 10-second opener pretty quickly, and then you just tack on a pre-consolidated 10-minute bed, whoosh.
Bang.
Gosh, that was great. When that happened, that was great. Oh, my God, I can drop it straight onto a folder. This is incredible. Instead of sitting there for 10 minutes, it was awful. And a lot of anxiety. So many producers suffer from post-traumatic stress.
No doubt. And to think that you used to do that on reel-to-reel in the old days, like with the multi-tracks and stuff, and have to rewind and play and rewind and play.
Mate, and they were just as fast.
Yeah.
They weren't slow at making that stuff. That's the thing that really kind of... surprise more. There's more features of like computers. You can send stuff out quicker and all of that stuff. But these producers back in the day, like while we pre-record VOs and edit them down, you know, these guys were just doing 30-second ads and just playing the music straight underneath it, ad after ad.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, Lee, but if you've ever heard stuff from the 80s, like when it's really high quality and you're like, holy shit, that sounds amazing. Yeah. Like the stuff they were pumping out back then is just such fantastic quality.
Yeah, I used to record a lot of stuff off, I think it was FM 104, Rockin' Stereo back in the day.
Rockin' Stereo.
Yeah, it was very schmick, but I can't remember what it sounds like. I don't think I've got any audio to listen to back to it to make that comparison now, but, you know.
I had this promo reel, and I wish I could remember who did it. Maybe you can leave it in the comments who produced this one. It was SAFM. Back in the probably around 86, 87, and I used to listen to this promo on the reel to reel, so loud because I just used to think to myself, this is the best promo ever, and it was the Adelaide Alive Grand Prix promo, and it went for like a minute and a half, and it was this remix version of INXS What You Need.
Awesome.
What you need? Adelaide comes alive. It was Steve Britton, and he voiced it. And I was thinking, one day I'll be able to produce a promo like that. And this is in 1999.
Yeah.
And this promo was from 87. I couldn't believe it. That was just such a
you know, but that's obviously a different time and they were taking different drugs back in the 80s and they were drinking
I think
a lot
that
more.
Was totally what 80s and 90s radio was about. Was you know, getting pissed or getting high and then going and doing your best work. It was super creative and fun. Like the fun used to come across on air.
So I get to 96 FM, right, and I walk into my studio, which is all black. Super cool. You had these Yamaha NS1000s up, and they were my speakers. And, you know, it was pretty cool looking for a station that had was running on tape. So I get there, right, and I'm sort of like looking at the studio after a couple of weeks. I noticed there was a lot of these scratches in the bench work. And so I'm like this 20-year-old kid. I'm totally naive. Like, I lived a pretty comprehensive life up until then, but I was pretty, like, you know, green to the world. And Kyle comes in, and I go, oh, yeah, studio. What's those scratches there? And he goes, hey, you fucking know what those scratches are. And I've gone, no. He goes, this is where people used to, like, take lines of coke in here. And I'm like, oh, right. And then he walked me around this other room, and he showed me this room where they basically, and I was told this. Now, I don't know whether he was having me on. He goes, yeah, you know, the announcers, when they weren't on air, they just have these prostitutes in here, and they would just mess around with them, and then they'd go and do their shows.
Oh, my God.
Honestly, he's such a funny guy.
When it comes to, like, voiceover artists and so forth, you did mention Steve Britton being one of the guys back in the day. Who do you rate as a voiceover artist to do
images? Oh, there's so many. Cassie Aldridge, who I think is just, you know, I know Cassie.
Yeah.
So I think Cassie is an amazing talent. She's always had a great voice. And she's just got I actually used to think that people started copying her, because then I've heard a few other people, you know, over the years and gone, hey, is that Cassie? No, it's not. Yeah, a lot of voices, you know, I think Cassie's had an influence on female VOs.
Absolutely. And same with KCB. There was a guy back in the day that used to do the So Fresh ads. It sounded exactly like him.
Yeah, that's it. And then there's a girl called Lydia Crates in Wollongong, and her voice is brilliant. She is underrated. I think she may have gotten over doing VOs, but I think she's one of the best VOs. There's a girl called Paris. I don't know what her last name is, actually. I only ever knew it was Paris. She's with RMK, and she was our launch VO for HIT. She's just brilliant. She's just cool. She's just, at that point there, we were looking for someone who was, mid-20s, you know, living her life, going to parties, got a job, doing the things, just and a bit sassy and social-minded, you know, Instagram, da-da-da.
Yeah.
And she just nailed that whole voice. I think she's one of the best VOs. As far as guy VOs, I don't really pay attention to male VOs, to be honest.
You like the ladies, don't you, Tates?
Uh-oh, busted. You know, I'm not listening to male VOs too intensely. You know, there's a whole bunch of guys out there.
You've done a lot of VOs yourself, though, like with your imaging. You've done some pretty a broad range of sounds, I guess you could say.
Heaps. I've done heaps of voices. Like, you know, when you sort of start out and you're not getting any direction, you're kind of just sort of winging it. And I listen back to a lot of stuff that I did in the early days, and I've kind of gone, blah. What was I thinking?
Can you remember how you sounded back then? Do you want to give us a bit of a demo of what you used to sound like?
I could, you know what? I can take the piss out of a sound.
Yeah.
I was like, Hot FM, Townsville's number one hit music station. like it wasn't for Townsville, but that was the sound I was doing really early.
Yeah.
My first VO, I didn't know what I sounded like because I just didn't listen back to myself. I just did promos, but I didn't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was 20 and dumb, and I wasn't reflective of what I was doing. And a guy called Paul James, he was like, hey, mate, do you want to do a surf ad? And I'm like, yeah, okay. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't be the surfy. I just didn't know what they wanted because I didn't know what a surf ad sounded like because I'd never heard a surf ad. So a lot of the stuff that I started out doing was just utter shit. It was utter shit. And I just was like, you know, so if you're a VO and you're listening to this right now and you're thinking, oh, I'll just never get it, just stick at it. Like, you'll get it. Like, eventually, or to the point where your shit voice someone wanted, you know, and it's when they start paying for your shit voice, you're like, oh, okay, then.
Yeah.
So, but I've done lots of different styles. You know, there was that, you know, there's that neutral sound, you know, what was it? It was like Nova, you know, real kind of like whatever.
Sounds like Samuel Johnson.
Yeah.
So you just kind of talk like this. You kind of like, you don't care. And I used to think, wow, because all I wanted to do was like, you know, that voice I just did before, like number one, you know, you're kind of talking from your back of your throat and you're trying to sound cool. I'm really hyped, you know, and it just sounds awful. So if you're doing a voice like that, guys, don't just stop. It's like, it's not the radio you want, but you pick your styles and you find different promos or you hear different promos and the way they're produced and you're like, I can do that. I'll copy that.
One thing that I've also noticed, which has always stuck in my mind, you're having a session with Paul Pidione, I think, when you're at Mix FM and you're taking the piss out of those American TV ads that have the Australian voiceover dubs to them. And, you know, they just look like normal people and they're having a chat and then they've just got these super overacted voices all over the top.
Oh my gosh, it's like, do they even watch the original before they voice it? Like, watch the original first, listen to the original, then copy it to the best of your ability.
Oh my god.
I really care about my skin so much. That's why I like Nivea. And you can tell it's an American right person. And it's kind of like, and they chop it halfway so that then they go cut straight to the product because they know it just looks so disingenuous. It's like, no, fuck it. Let's just give them this shit. Nah, they'll go for it. It doesn't matter anymore.
What would those arsies know anyway?
Exactly. So, oh my gosh. Oh, Paul Pidione. I used to just cry laughing with him. What's he doing?
Yeah, he's the voice of Channel 9 these days.
Gosh, yeah. Yeah. Didn't he stack his bike recently? Is that a thing?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, he had a pretty serious accident, and he was on the podcast, and we were talking about how he used to do VOs from his bed because he had a neck brace on and all this sort of stuff. It was pretty incredible.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, there's almost a TV show. It's almost like some sketch TV show there. It's like no matter where he is, he just pulls over, like me in my Pajero.
Yeah.
I need a VO, Tony. All right, man, hold on a sec.
He's done it before.
Yeah. It sounds a bit roomy. Just put a gate on it. You know? just like there's ways around it, you know. It's funny. Just put a blanket up. Just get your mic stand. Put a blanket over it. And just talk really close to the blanket. Like there's all these. Oh my god. Like even like as a voiceover guy, right? You know, so many people think it's so glamorous. Oh my god, you're a voiceover guy. Wow, that must be really cool. So not really. It's just the thing I do. I talk into a microphone. I was voicing these Stratco ads recently, and my boys were in. Two young boys, 10 and 11, and they were in the booth with me. And I'm trying to voice this ad, and I'm going like, get in now to Stratco for these great deals. And they just couldn't stop laughing. And they're like, Dad, it doesn't sound like you. And I'm like, piss off, get out. Go. We're all laughing because even I can tell, like, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, when you're doing these ads, sometimes you're doing the dumbest voice, and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's people out there like digging trenches and stuff. Like, you don't know how exhausting it is to actually voice an ad. Like, you lose your breath, man. Sometimes you've got to voice it twice. It's true.
What's happening in your world at the moment? Because I think the last I heard you were doing some stuff in southern New South Wales, and now you're in Adelaide doing some stuff or trying to get some stuff on.
So I've always got like 50 things on. Like I like to keep busy. But this year has been a little bit unbusy because everything that I did that kept me busy ended.
Yeah.
Thanks, COVID-19.
Yeah.
Or just COVID. They say COVID-19.
That's COVID-20 now.
Oh, COVID-30 soon, I guess. you know what I'm saying. So, you know, I was, you know, doing operations, production, basically the everything guy, but not titled the everything guy at in Nowra. And COVID came in and it decimated. Like, we had the fires there, which was awful down the south coast. It was literally a disaster.
Yeah.
And then COVID came in and then a heap of people got fired. I was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, so that's fine. Like, thanks, guys. See ya. I'll be fine. And I was fine because I've been doing trading before that. So, trading, voiceovers, production, et cetera, et cetera. Plus, I was doing weddings. So, all the wedding stuff dried up as well because, you know, don't want to get sick.
No.
So, all of that ended. But I've literally spent the last year doing whatever I want because it's not like anything I've ever done. Like, I'm in a position now where I can sort of
do what I like and choose what I want. So I'm just sort of dabbling here, dabbling there, and really so much more at peace because, you know, anybody who works in radio, it's the complaint you can't make when you're in radio. And I can make it now because I'm not in radio. And it's true because I don't care. Like, radio can really ruin you. It's like the more you do, they'll see me working harder. They won't see you working harder. They'll go, hey, he's working harder. Let's give him more work.
Yeah.
He's the guy we can rely on to get it done. And then you go home and you whinge to your mates. It's like, oh, no, I can't. You know, these people, they don't appreciate me. It's like, they never did. They never will. They'll probably say they do. And maybe they do as people. But as an employee, it was hard. And so I felt that I just gave my all. Like, my all. And, you know, since I've been out of radio, and I'm not bagging radio out, anyone who's thinking I am, because I'm not. Like, radio gave me everything I ever dreamed of, so radio helped me achieve my goals. But radio can really take it out of you, and it's really, I think it's really important now, in retrospect, to draw the line and not sort of resent radio for what it makes you feel like you have to do. Do your job the best you can and just love what you do, because why did we get into radio in the first place? You know, we got into radio because we loved it. It's freaking cool.
Yeah.
It is. Like, radio is freaking cool. When it's cool, it's cool. And it can, when it's like Hollywood, it's like Hollywood, and you're just living the best life. You're hanging with your mates. You're making dumb jokes on the microphone. And people come to you, I heard that joke you said yesterday. That was really funny. it's a little bit of an ego boost, and then that propels you forward.
Yeah.
In the end, I just did radio to do the things that I loved.
Yeah.
You know, I made the sketches I loved. I made the promos I loved. I took the piss, and I felt like I was bringing, like Kanye, bringing real rap back. I felt like I was bringing real radio back.
Hey. But,
you know what? They don't think they want it. They just want to do the job, make it neat, don't make any ripples, sign out. That's like, this sucks. Yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah.
So I'm really living my best life. So I'm bloody happy and chilled.
Oh, so good to hear, man. And I know a lot of people can totally relate to what you just said. But it's kind of hard to say when you're, you know, working in the industry and, you know, you don't want to ruffle any feathers and you want to keep your job and considering the current climate that is COVID, you know.
It's a real shame because what I really believed, I think radio, because ironically it's a communications platform, right?
Yeah.
And people in radio really want to bring the best out of radio. They really want radio to work the best.
Yeah.
And I think that, it wasn't until I became a content director and was on the other side of the desk did I understand what all that meant. Because before I was just a producer and, like, I would think to myself, just like so many other people in radio, they'd be like, these guys don't know what they're doing. You know, they should do this. But you get to the other side of the desk and you get a completely different view. And so I understand it from both sides, I think. And, well, I hope I do, because I'd like to think that I was fairly considerate in my view on it. And it's not easy on both sides. And there's a little bit of a battle going on. And sometimes it's either a lack of communication or the desire for control and power.
Yeah.
And there's that, you know, that back and forth. And, you know, you've got employees that are complaining all the time and you've got a lot of nods happening and serious faces around the station. I think if people in radio weren't punished or singled out for their opinions on radio and about radio and about a radio station, I reckon the industry could grow so much more. But people are now oftentimes doing the job simply because it's a job. Yeah. Because what are the options? The options are mowing lawns, which isn't a bad idea. Jim's mowing's doing very well. That's a really sad part about the industry. And that's not just radio, that's everything. People could just be honest and frank about the problems, that would be a big change, and I think the culture would change because that's what's needed.
Tony Lawson on the Radio Fanboy Podcast. Thanks for joining us, Tony. It's good to catch up after all these years, mate.
Oh, bloody great to catch up. I can't see your face, but it says Lee on my phone, so
yeah.
lovely to talk with you, Lee.
The Radio Fanboy Podcast, hosted by Bevo and produced by Matt Fulton Productions. Dan Hill speaking.